listening to episode 339 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's conversation is an important one. Today's conversation actually came about because I was doing what I do sometimes when I'm looking for amazing guests to have on the podcast. I was on Amazon looking at books that are about to be released, and the book written by today's guest caught my eye. And specifically, today we're talking about the important topic of burnout. It's something that so many of us have experienced in the last couple of years as we have been bombarded with stress from all sides of our life. But I would argue it's something that we have been experiencing pre-pandemic. We just haven't put our finger on it. We haven't been able to maybe describe how we're feeling or even describe why we might be feeling the way that we are. And today, I adore our guest today because she basically gives you the words to explain what it is you're feeling and why. So I'm absolutely thrilled to welcome this week's guest. This week, we're speaking with Caroline Dooner. She is a writer, humorist. She's an ex-professional actress and singer. She's a self-proclaimed Instagram addict and a wannabe gardener. She started writing about the relationship that we all have with food about 10 years ago on her blog. We'll get to what it's called in just a second. After she took radical steps to heal her own relationship with food. She ended up writing a book about that experience, and today we're talking about her second book, which focuses on burnout and her taking 2 years of rest after running herself into the ground. Now, here's what I want to say before you go any further in this episode. We're going to be swearing kind of a lot in this episode. So heads up, if you're typically the person who listens in the car and you have kids in the car, or you don't have headphones in, or maybe you're at work, this is your forewarning. Use headphones. Be in a place where it is appropriate for you to hear some swear words. In particular, we say the F word a lot. So I'm going to give you a good 5 count right now to find the pause button and hit it, because I'm about to just lay a bunch of F words down. And I know I don't usually do that on the podcast. So you're going to get a good 5 count to either hit the pause button to continue listening if you don't care that I'm going to use the F word a whole bunch in just a moment, or to throw some earbuds in and get yourself situated to be able to do it. Are you ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, be in a position where you can hear some F words. All right, so Carolyn's first book was called The Fuck It Diet. She wrote it after she got just fed up with her relationship with food. And the word fuck it just describes that point of throwing your arms up and just being like, no, I cannot do this anymore. What is beautiful is her most recent book is called Tired as Fuck. And this is her, you know, way of describing her own sort of memoir, her own experience with burnout, and the big contributors to it, but more importantly, the small contributors to it. The small deposits we make on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis that contribute to our burnout, and we don't even realize it. The expectations, the belief systems, the emotions, the guilt, the small stressors day-to-day that contribute to burnout. She talks about them all in this book. She talks about her 2 years that she set aside to say, no, I am burnt out. I need a radical commitment to myself to get myself back to a place where I am doing okay. And that is where this second book, Tired as Fuck, came from. So if you're in a position where you are feeling burnt out, where you're feeling, yes, physically, but emotionally, just drained, like you can barely put words to it. You can't really explain it, or you're feeling called to take a big action because you just can't sustain it any longer. this episode is for you. The whole reason why I reached out to Caroline and her team was because I knew that burnout is something that so many of us are facing right now, and I knew it was a topic that we needed to cover. All right, so that's all I'm going to say. Again, F-bombs galore in this episode. Just know that that's going to happen. But please, if it is possible for you to stick around for this episode, you're not going to want to miss it. It is such an important topic. All right, let's hear that conversation with Caroline Dooner. Caroline, I am so excited that you're here for this episode because when I saw your book coming out, I knew I had to stalk you and find you and talk to you. So thank you for being here.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
You have written, well, a couple of interesting books, but most recently, your most recent book is called Tired as Fuck. Can you please tell me what it was that inspired you to write this book? And
yes,
give us just a little synopsis of what it's about.
Yes. So, you know, when I started writing this book, I actually thought it was going to be titled 2 Years of Rest, because that was this kind of, you know, I know it sounds absurd, and I was leaning a little bit into the absurdity of, and how extreme it sounds to go in 2 years of rest, but I was extremely, extremely burnt out 5 years ago. And I had just gone through this pretty radical healing period the few years prior to that, where I was healing my relationship with food. And I was unlearning so many myths and really unhelpful beliefs about food and weight and health and appetite and worth. And it revolutionized my life. It really, really, really helped me so much to step out of this like cultural paradigm I was in and that so many of us are in. And I was feeling great for a couple years, and then I hit a wall, and I was just like, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was struggling so much to enjoy doing all of the things that I'd been enjoying doing for a couple years. It became clear to, I actually didn't realize it was burnout. That's not how I described it while it was happening. I just kept saying, I'm so tired. I'm so tired. Mm-hmm. And it finally hit me that it wasn't just physical exhaustion. I was experiencing physical exhaustion, but it wasn't just stemming from physical depletion. It was actually stemming from years of guilt, honestly, years of this low grade anxiety that I had never addressed. I didn't even realize it was happening. Mm. And I was able to kind of make this parallel between the healing period I'd gone through, you know, 5 years before that, where I totally kind of upended all my beliefs and the way that I talked to myself and the way that I saw myself and what I believed I was supposed to be doing with food and weight and health. And I realized I had to do that with everything else in my life that I was still allowing to run me down and deplete me. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to actually go on another radical healing period. And it's going to be my 2 years of rest. It's going to be, I'm going to take a very, very specific amount of time and try to untangle myself from the mess I'm in. And I still, you know, a lot of people think that the 2 years of rest was me lying in bed for 2 years and like having people wait on me or going, you know, to live on an island for 2 years. It's not it at all. I was still living my real life. I just wanted to figure out how to create more peace and how to unpack all of the beliefs that I had about what I should be doing that was leading to this constant guilt. Mm-hmm. And so when I started writing the book, I thought it was going to be similar to the first book, where it was like a self-help book that was just like, this is why we're tired and this is what to do about it. But what I actually wrote was the story of how I had gotten exhausted in the first place and all of the teeny tiny little things that seems so normal that we all kind of experience and we all kind of perpetuate on ourselves, that led to this exhaustion and then what I, and then going into the 2 years of rest. So I, along the way, I was like, okay, people are going to be disappointed if they think this is going to be a book just about the rest. It's actually about the exhaustion. And though it's a, you know, it's a very personal story and memoir based, there's a lot of that in there. It really is meant to, first of all, be entertaining, but also kind of shine a light on and be a mirror for other people's exhaustion, because we all have a different experience. We all have a different life story, but there are these themes of what we experience and what our culture, you know, expects of us, or we expect of us because of our culture, that will deplete a lot of us and make us feel guilty nonstop that we're supposed to be doing something different or living a different life or, you know, doing things differently or better. So that's my long-winded explanation of how Tired as Fuck came to be.
I love it. And what's interesting about that is you started from a place that we advocate a lot on the podcast, and it's more of a place of awareness. You can't fix an issue or work on something that you can't pinpoint or even see. And you made such a beautiful point that there are, say, large and small things that contribute to the burnout that all of us probably can relate to, even if it's just, you know, from time to time. Mm-hmm. And especially the small ones, you just glaze right over them.
Right.
Like, you don't even realize the cumulative effect
yes.
that all of this can have on you and ultimately how it leaves you feeling, because probably everybody around you looks just as haggard as
exactly,
you do.
Exactly. And we kind of, like, you know, meme culture, all of these meme accounts that are like geared toward people who are 30 and above. And it's like, oh, you're just tired every day. And that's how it is. Like, and it's funny because it's true and it's relatable. And we're all like, oh my God, yeah, that's, we're all exhausted. And I think most people don't know why. Mm. And well, we know the big reasons, right? We're overloaded, but we don't understand the drain that the emotional and the mental and the guilt part has on us. We don't understand how that feeds into the picture, because there are so many things that we do have to do. There are so many things that we can't just, you know, take off our to-do list or say, oh, I don't care about my kids. I don't care about all of the, you know, I'm just never going to go to work again. Obviously we can't do that, but there's this other level of these expectations that we don't even realize that we've taken on. Or even just like comparing ourselves to other people, well, they're able to do this and they can handle that, so I should be able to do that. And it's like, no, we all have different situations, and, you know, we don't necessarily understand, you know, that we are expecting ourselves to be able to do things or to want to do things even that maybe we're just not meant to do. But yeah, when you talked about the awareness, that was the issue for me. In the beginning, I was like, I didn't know how to help myself because I didn't understand why I was so tired.
Yeah.
And in the beginning I was like, okay, well, this will pass, or there's something, you know, maybe I just need to find the right supplement, or, you know, it was like, oh, I'll be able to figure this out. And it was when it didn't pass and it just got worse that I was like, okay, there's something deeper going on here. Mm. And I need to give myself the time to actually figure it out, because the part that's so difficult, like what I wanted to start being able to say was to say no to things, just simply say no to things without feeling guilty. Mm. That was so hard. That was so hard.
Tell me about the guilt part of it. Cause you mentioned it beautifully before, that this idea of burnout, it wasn't just that you were physically I mean, we do that a lot, right? We're rushing around all over the place, but the guilt side of it and the emotional side of it, I mm-hmm. don't think we realize the impact there. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, because for me, it really was like a deep kind of profound realization when I realized, and this is my, and I think we all have some version of this, that the person that we believe that we should be, or the, you know, the path that we believe that we should follow. But for me, ever since I was a teenager, even younger than that, I I was on this path to becoming a musical theater performer. And there, and I, when, before we started recording, I told you that you look like Laura Benanti. She is this famous musical theater performer.
That made my day. P.S. I just like said, I'm basically going to quit and go home today because that was the nicest compliment.
Everyone look up Laura Benanti. April looks just like Laura Benanti. But, so I, you know, it was like this life that I invested so much energy and time and money and years into. And I had all of this support, all of this encouragement. Everybody in my life was like, you are going to be on Broadway. You know, you can do it. I'm so impressed with you. And I loved it. And I was professionally acting in, you know, in, I grew up outside of Philadelphia. So I was professionally acting in Philadelphia in high school. And I went to NYU for musical theater. It was all of this, like, it was like this build, it, like, it felt like this really important thing in my life. Like, it felt like I had to live up to this thing that everyone thought that I was going to do. And that I did. It's not that I didn't love it. I loved it, but it also brought me extreme, extreme anxiety. And I did not let myself admit that. Mm-hmm. It was this kind of thing where I thought that I could just lose weight, become prettier, and that would take away all my anxiety, all my audition anxiety. But I didn't realize, it really took me, it was when I had this realization, and I was 28. I was 28 years old.
So you're like over a decade into this career at this point.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I finally understood, and I've been learning, okay, we have, you know, I've been kind of on this self-discovery journey for the previous 4 or 5 years of unlearning all of these beliefs that I had about what I was supposed to be doing or what I was supposed to be looking like or all of these things. But it just hit me when I was experiencing this extreme burnout and I didn't understand why. It hit me that every single day for the previous 15 years, at least, I woke up and I felt guilt that I wasn't doing enough. And I felt dread and anxiety at what was coming up, because what was usually coming up was an audition or a performance that I was always stressed about. And that I never, ever, 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 if I had a day off or a weekend off or a week off, I never felt like I was allowed to be relaxing. And therefore I never relaxed and I was never calm. And it took me so long to realize that I had been operating with that kind of energy for so long. Of course I was tired.
Yes.
Of course. It had been, you know, if you looked at what my life was and what I was doing on paper, you wouldn't understand. And that's what was so hard for me to wrap my head around. I was like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't deserve to be this tired. You know, I don't deserve to take radical action if I'm tired, because if I compare myself to other people, it looks like I'm, you know, barely doing anything really compared to them, compared to what they're juggling. But I wasn't accounting for the year. I mean, genuinely years of just never, ever, never feeling like I was doing enough and never letting myself relax or even just have a day off the hook where I didn't have this background. Oh, but you should be doing this and you need to be doing that. And this is coming up and this, and that's life, right? It's not like, you know, that's probably how most of us are operating. And I don't think that's ever going to go away. I think, you know, we obviously have things coming up. We have things, there's so much that we're always going to be juggling, but it was this specific amount of anxiety that I didn't let myself, you know, and I think I had to go through this process. Like, if I had just started, if I had in my teens been like, well, I know that this is going to stress me out, so I'm just not even going to try. Like, I don't necessarily think that would have been the better path. And I don't think that I would have learned what I learned. But when I finally admitted, look, this is a life that I'm trying to live at this point for other people. This is a life that I'm trying to live at this point because I don't want to look like a failure, or I don't want to admit defeat, or I don't even want to admit to myself that there are many things that I love about this, but it's the cost, the emotional and at this point physical cost is too high. And it took really getting honest with myself and prioritizing something different. So for a long time I was prioritizing like success and like glory and like, you know, showing everyone that they weren't wrong, believing in that I could do this thing. And I got to a point where I was like, I have to prioritize my own peace. Cause this has just become so unsustainable that I've reached this point where I'm like at depletion, you know?
Yeah. You hit on something so central to not only something I've been talking about more often on the podcast, but something, a thought experiment and almost a practice that I'm just wedging into my own life right now, because I'm very similar to you in the sense of just my worth is tied up in how much I'm doing and how much I'm accomplishing, and I don't rest very well, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's this notion of what if I ran the thought experiment that I'm a human being. And by that, I mean, human being animals, as a biological animal, we have some basic needs. Now our basic needs, I'm not just talking about how to like keep our body alive, but like keep our body alive and do okay. They're a bit more complex than say a house plant or, you know, your dog,
right?
I guess maybe dogs even have some of these, but care and feeding. We need to feed ourselves. We need to drink water. We need to sleep. We need to rest, which is different than sleep. We need social interaction. We need entertainment. We need white space in our day where we're not just scheduled. We need to be able to set things down mentally. And what was interesting to me, and you described it beautifully, is so many times we ignore the fact that we're human beings and have all those needs. And we say, I have to accomplish this. I don't deserve to have lunch yet because I haven't gotten enough done, or I don't deserve to rest yet because I didn't accomplish XYZ. We don't realize that you don't earn basic need, the fulfillment of your basic needs. You fulfill your basic needs so that you have the energy to do these other things. You don't punish yourself for not having energy by not doing the things that human beings get energy from.
Yes.
It's the most ridiculous thing. Like, you would never take your house plant, not water it, hide it in a dark closet, and when it starts to wilt, scream at it for not doing a good job.
Exactly. And it's so cultural, because the reason that we think it's okay is because we're all doing it and we're all kind of caught up in this frenzy of like, oh, well, and it makes us feel impressive. It makes us feel like, oh, well, I'm handling this and I'm, you know, oh my gosh. And we just assume that that's the way it has to be, or that's the way that it should be. And, you know, say we go a couple of days doing what you just said, like kind of pushing lunch and kind of going a little bit too hard, you know, that will be okay probably for a couple of days. We may end up super exhausted. And if we are in tune enough with ourselves, we'll say, whoa, I've been going really hard. I need to kind of overcorrect for this and kind of come back to a baseline where I have energy again. But because we usually don't do that, that becomes a cumulative thing that after a year, two, three, 10, 20, we're like, what's wrong with me? Why am I so miserable? Why am I so depleted? And it's the days and days and days and days and days of ignoring our basic human needs to have comfort, to have time for your mind to not be problem solving. And because it's because culturally we don't prioritize that, so many of us get to a point where we're like, what's wrong with me? Why am I feeling this way? And it's because you're a human who is living in a culture that doesn't tell, doesn't remind you, you are more than just this productivity robot person, you know?
Yeah. And I say that it's, so it's this practice that I'm trying to implement, because it is not some, I always say, like, if it's not something you do naturally, it needs to be something that you intentionally put into your day and intentionally yes. practice. And that's what I mean about, this is a practice that I'm trying to do. And one, this isn't the only wake up call, but a recent one for me is that when I think about my life, I've got two young kids. One is 3 years old. One is 6 years old. I am an entrepreneur, run my own business. Mm-hmm. My husband's an ER physician during a pandemic who works shift work and is like gone lots of evenings and nights and whatever. So I'm just like in this constant state of like catching variables that are changing all the time.
Yeah.
In order to do that, my life is pretty regimented. Like I'm up at the same time every day because my kids are, and that's when I can shower reliably and all these other things, tons of regimented, you know, big pieces in my life, but I was adding an extra layer of pressure, and it comes down to the things that you talked about.
That is
in your, in your first book, you talked about the fuck it diet and like, I would not consider myself somebody who had disordered eating, but I thought about what I was eating in a way that was much more regimented. I thought about, oh, should I have that glass of wine? I don't know. And I was like picking that apart. And then I was picking apart how I was like communicating with my clients. I was adding all this on top, and it broke recently.
Yes.
I went on vacation to St. John for a full week. I literally somehow by some divine intervention was able to get a full week off from my clients.
Right.
And I let everything go. I slept when I wanted to sleep. I ate what I wanted to eat as much as I wanted, whenever I wanted. I drank what I wanted. We rented a boat. I was the first one to jump off the back of the boat and go snorkeling and just leave my husband to fend or deal with the kids. In ways that I would never allow myself to do. And I felt like I was reborn. And I was like, no. Okay, yes, I cannot live in St. John every day. No, what elements of that can I bring back here? And that's what this feels like. You didn't just, you know, like quit your job and, you know, neglect any financial responsibilities and that type of thing. But the mindset shift around, no, I'm tired. Like I'm allowed to just hang for 20 minutes and just veg. That's okay.
Yes. You understand it so, so, so well. You know what? And I was 28 at the time. And one of the things I told myself was, okay, what is the world telling me about the fact that I'm 28, about to be 30? What is the pressure that I'm supposed to be feeling? And how can I deliberately tell myself the opposite? Because I'm going on 2 years of rest where I try to figure out and get out from under the pressure I've put on myself. I am deliberately telling myself that in 2 years, I do not have to be any further along, any more impressive. I don't have to figure anything out in these 2 years. I am allowed to just be. And then of course, you know, things would, because I kind of set that intention, right? That was my intention. And then of course things would come up and guilt would come up and stress would come up and, oh no, what, you know, all of that would come up. But because I set this intention to be very, very, very aware of it and so much kinder to myself, it was easier to identify it and do the work to unpack, where is this coming from? Why am I talking to myself like this? Why am I worried about this? What is the messaging? What are the beliefs? What's underneath all of this? Where is this coming from? And you just said something, you know, understanding that that extra level of pressure, because having a regimented schedule, you know, having all of this stuff that you have in place to just keep your life running, like that's not bad. That's good. That helps you to function, you know, that like helps you probably to not completely lose your mind because at least things are getting done. But then what's that other, what's that layer of pressure and kind of perfectionism that we add on top of that, where we can't let, where nothing's flexible. Right. And for, with food, one of my big realizations was, okay, I can allow myself to eat all of the food in the world. Because, you know, what I was trying to do was, after years of restricting food, even though I was a binge eater, that was the big revelation of the fuck it diet was, oh my God, I thought I was a food addict. That's why I've been putting myself on these diets, because I keep binging and losing control, not understanding that this underlying fear of food and fear of gaining weight and this underlying constant mental noise and micromanaging food is actually the thing that's making me so out of control around food. So how can I step out of that cycle? And because there had been years of fear around food and attempts at restricting, it was this pendulum swing to the other side where I was allowing myself to eat anything I needed and wanted, all of these things I was afraid of, all of, you know, really trusting the body as a smart machine, but also as a creature that needed the assurance that I wasn't going to continue to starve it intermittently. And there was this kind of like extreme period of eating a lot more, all the things I wasn't allowed to do, all these things I thought were the most irresponsible thing. But what I realized was, I cannot just allow this physically if I am still stressed about it and feel guilty about it and keep telling myself, well, this is just temporary and I better, you know, and I better do this or I better not do that. That mental noise and that mental guilt actually would keep me and was keeping me stuck in this nervous place with food that was actually making me more out of control around food. So the allowance with food had to be both physical and mental and emotional.
You're hitting on two. I have to put two nerd things in here really quick. Cognitive psychologist by background. Mm-hmm. That mental noise is so much cognitive load. Mm-hmm. It is so tiring. Mm-hmm. If you've ever gone through like a really detailed, like you've refinanced your house or like you've helped move your parents out of there or whatever, like, oh my God, you're just exhausted because you've been thinking so hard. Your mind consumes like 20% of your calories. It's exhausting physically. So one, and two, this notion that like you would restrict and it would sort of like bounce back. There's a cognitive psych phenomenon called the rebound effect, where we try to suppress thoughts, like, don't think about that food I want to eat. Don't think about that food, or whatever it is. Don't think about the thing that I want to do or the thing I want to indulge in. It comes roaring back. Like there's an equal and opposite reaction to that suppression. And it's stronger than if we would have just moderated in the moment and allowed a little bit.
Yes. So that's the thing. Like I believe, and there's research to support that there's actually a physical rebound, but there's also a mental rebound. And there's two things happening at once, and you have to address both because they affect each other. You know, so, and it is really, it is a very difficult and complicated journey to go on, because there is so much to unpack, and we have been taught to distrust our bodies and our appetites and our cravings, all of these things. So we have so much mental noise kind of battling this process of trying to get free with food because we're so afraid of what it looks like and what the consequences might be. So it really is difficult. Unless you have a lot of support reminding you that this experience with food, you know, this healing process is normal and it's okay and it's safe. But the parallel is what you were just saying about this extra pressure. When I realized with my own exhaustion, if I am letting myself quote unquote rest, but I am feeling constantly guilty about it, it is defeating. It's not giving me anything. It's potentially depleting me even more. Mm-hmm. So that is the piece, you know, that is the thing I really want people to take away from this, is asking themselves, okay, where am I making my life more difficult than it has to be? Where am I perpetuating this pressure on myself that doesn't need to be there? Life is hard enough. Right? There's enough to manage. Where am I making it harder?
Yeah. Okay. So you talked to, I want to hit some like bullet points before I transition into kind of a more modern, like happening to us right now topic. You talked about food and this pendulum piece with food. What did you notice with sleep or rest? Did you notice any like interesting patterns there when you started to allow?
Yes. One thing that sticks out to me is when I was in my first quote unquote year of rest, I had moved cities. I moved from New York to Philadelphia because it was too expensive to rest and to try to take some, you know, space in New York. So I moved back to Philadelphia, and my intention was to do as little as I could to get by for 2 years. But I was also, because I started saying no to things, and it created this vacuum in my life. And I'd quit acting because that was one of the big things. I was like, I can't keep doing this. This is the biggest energy, emotional suck on me. However, when I moved to Philadelphia, I had all these contacts, and I was called in for these three auditions. And what I really hate about acting is the auditions. I don't hate the actual job. I hate the constant seeking and the constant judgment. And I was like, you know what? If it's easy enough, I'm just going to go in for these. And, you know, I'm not attached to it at all. So it doesn't even matter. I basically quit. I got all three of them. So the first year of rest, I was acting nonstop, which was like not what I'd planned. But there was a woman, an older woman in one of the shows that I did. And I was talking to everyone about how exhausted, you know, I know I'm doing this, but I'm like really trying to rest.
Like, I'm here,
really,
but I'm not here. I'm not here.
Like, you know, going out for drinks after? No, I'm going home and I'm, you know, going to bed. But this woman said to me, and I'd been, you know, it had been maybe 6 months of this deliberate trying to do less and trying to really be aware of my mindset. And she said to me, and she'd been professionally acting nonstop, I mean, from show to show to show to show to show for, you know, 40 years. And she resonated so strongly with the fact that I was resting. And everyone, you know, people didn't understand it, but they were like, what are you talking? Like, you know, it was, people were like, what do you mean? I think I need that. Like, whatever you're talking about, I think I need. And she said, Caroline, how many days of doing nothing do you need before you start to want to do things again? And I was like, oh, what a great question. And I thought about it and I said, you know what? If I'm lucky enough to be able to do this, but if I take three solid days of having a clear schedule, on the fourth day, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm ready to do something to meet. And I was exhausted at that point. So it was all relative, right?
Yeah.
But it was a really interesting question because it made me realize, even on a small scale, even on the micro scale, if I really, truly am able to take true time off, by the fourth day, I'm like, I actually genuinely want to do something and to take action and to be productive or be creative or whatever. I really guess I should be doing things. And like, no, I'm ready. I'm ready. That was really helpful. But then on the bigger scale, I was so, you know, I was nervous. There were things, you know, I kind of had this awareness of what I wanted the situation to be. Molly, no, don't do that. She's going to try to dig in my floor and like create a hole so she can sleep in it. I knew what I wanted the journey to be like, but I knew what it could be. Like, I had this hope that just like my relationship with food, I would naturally, my body would find a natural balance if I could get out of its way and let it do its thing. That was the hope, right? But I was afraid. I was like, well, what if I'm wrong? What if there's something wrong with me? Or what if I just become so lazy that I like never want to do anything again? What if this just gets worse and worse and worse? Like, I had all this fear that maybe what I was doing was incredibly irresponsible and I was missing some piece of the picture. But I still had this intuitive sense that if I could just give myself time, I could get to a place where hopefully I wasn't as exhausted mentally, physically, everything. And zooming way out and looking back at those 2 years, it did actually take me a little bit longer than 2 years because I chose 2 years so randomly. It was like a half joke, honestly. Like I was just trying to tell people, like, look, this isn't like a month long thing or like a weekend long thing. Like I am looking like I really need like a big, big shift. And there's something wrong with the way I'm approaching everything. I need time to work out the kinks. I need time to figure it out. I need time to let myself off the hook. And it needs to feel radical enough that I can actually like kind of almost just like figuratively and like actually let my muscles like unclench and like actually genuinely relax. And I would say at the 2.5 year mark ish, I really was like, okay, I feel like I have the mental and physical energy to start seeing my friends again, because honestly, that was something. And this isn't the kind of rest that everyone needs. I talk a lot about how we all have different things that exhausted us. And therefore we have different paths through rest to kind of like unwind and to give ourselves what we need. I was exhausted on so many levels. And one of them was I was constantly out like drinking with friends constantly. And again, there's nothing bad about that. And that could be the kind of rest that people who are just constantly working need. But I also needed to be able to say no and to not feel guilty for staying in, going to, because it's this strange pressure of like, well, I was single in my 20s. So if I wasn't out meeting people, I was, you know, I was going to end up being single and dying alone. Like it was this weird, like, and I think a lot of people worry about that, but I was noticing that it was, again, this was a huge, huge energy suck and a huge worry that I had. And because of that, I wasn't letting myself take the time to stay in and not feel guilty. It was one of those things. It was like, even if I said, no, I'm too tired to go out, I would stay at home going, oh, I should have gone out. What's wrong? You know, it was this constant thing. So one of the things during the 2 years of rest was I need to tell my friends that I'm exhausted and that I'm going to be doing less. I still did things, you know, it's not like I wasn't seeing anybody, but it was just this question of, okay, do you really have energy for that particular thing?
Yeah.
And when you say no, do you then spend the entire time that you're not there feeling guilty? And that was like one of the big things to unpack. After 2.5 years, I really got to this genuine place where I wanted to do things again. I wanted to see people. I wanted to start, you know, I had the energy to do it and I didn't have to force myself to be excited about things that I had no energy for two and a half years before. And that was what I was hoping for. And I was like, oh, thank God. Thank God that I didn't just, and then of course the biggest irony of all of it, January, 2020, I was like, this is my year. I'm going to start going out to dinner with my friends. I'm so excited. I just rested for 2.5, 3 years. And then, you know, that was like, you know, what is the saying? Make plans and, what is it? What is that? Like
know.
God laughs or something.
All I could think of, wasn't there a Mike Tyson quote where it's like, everybody has a plan till you get punched in the face.
Oh, and that's perfect. That's better. That's even better. But I just, you know, well, that's like comical, like tragic, however you want to look at it. Cause you know, everyone, that's the funny thing, you know, the first 2 weeks when everyone was like, okay, maybe it's nice that we have these 2 weeks off, you know? Even then I was thinking, okay, I already did this.
Yeah.
I already took 2 years plus off. Like I'm ready to get out there. And I was so comfortable with resting. That's the other thing, because I'd taken the time, I was now in a more comfortable place, you know, even, you know, let's ignore COVID and the pandemic. Even going into that, I was in a more comfortable place to actually know how to gauge whether I have energy to do things, to say yes to things, to, you know, and a bigger trust. And one of my big fears was, well, if I say no to this opportunity, this is my last chance. This is you know, I have to say yes to everything because, you know, what if there are no more? It was this like lack of trust, you know, a big scarcity mentality around life that I was trying to purposely, you know, have a different approach. That was my goal.
I love that. I'm curious. So you talked about the pandemic a little bit. We're 2 years in now, almost to the date.
Oh my
and,
God.
Which is crazy. We're seeing some dramatic shifts in yes. the way people work, in what they tolerate from mm-hmm. work, mm-hmm. the way they live. I have my own theories on this, but I would love to hear your thoughts. Given everything you've learned, the word burnout is getting thrown around indefinitely. Like, you know, my husband talks about it in the scope of his job in the emergency department and that type of thing. That for sure, but just across the board, parents yeah. and just people feeling burnt out in a way that we haven't talked about
yes.
before. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on what we're seeing right now?
Yeah. So what's what's definitely happening is there is physical burnout. Like there is, you are physically being expected to juggle things that are essentially impossible to juggle, like, you know,
right.
even still, but especially in the beginning when people were like, okay, so I'm supposed to be working from home while my kids are home doing and homeschooling them at the same time. Like, is that like actually possible? And so people were genuinely trying to do the impossible and even just like process the fact that they were expected to do the impossible in the first place. So there's been this actual physical load, right? For some people, for other people, they've been like, I haven't done anything and that's depleted me in its own yeah. way. I haven't been able to do anything. But then there's the emotional, right? There's been this emotional, just like constant depletion because everything is up in the air. Everything is so tense. Nobody knows what's coming. There's so much you could potentially be worried about and that we are worried about. How could we not be? And even just going beyond health stress, like just so much has broken down and so much, there's just so much tension. I mean, just the fact that people are so at odds and see things so differently. That's like there's like this existential.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe saying the word terror is too extreme, but I think there really has been this existential
trauma
panic.
Though, certainly.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that is, you know, even for the people who are like, okay, well, I've kind of found my footing and I'm figuring out how to juggle, you know, this, whatever the new situation is with work and kids and school and I'm figuring it out, even though there are times that are harder. What I think we're all experiencing at this point is just like you said, that trauma that maybe we're not even aware of, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, if we don't understand how trauma can manifest, we assume it's just from the big, you know,
right.
big,
yeah.
big capital T traumatic experiences, you know, accidents, war, death, attacks, all of these things that are genuinely right. traumatic, but having an experience like we've all gone through in the past 2 years, especially if we haven't known how to process it as it's been happening, which most people don't, and most people didn't even know, you know, what was going on. And that's the thing, like trauma happens when we don't have the capacity to process in real time. And that's okay. Like it's very normal. But then the question is, okay, well now what is my body holding on to? What is my psyche holding on to? I think we're all kind of coming to this place at the same time. And I think for some people it's revealing that they are living a life that isn't working for them.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing because in the very least it's inviting introspection, right? And reevaluation. And and asking ourselves the questions of, okay, well, what do I want my life to look like? Mm-hmm. And what stress have I taken on? But that's a hard place to get to in the first place, especially if you feel like you're in survival mode. So I think we're all going through, or we're all realizing that we've just gone through something incredibly, incredibly difficult and traumatic, and that we're burnt out beyond just the physical. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what's happening. I think we are, you know, so many people are genuinely physically burnt out, but there's more. There's yeah. this extra layer. And so, you know, I was talking to somebody, I've said this a couple of times because somebody put this in such amazing words. They said, you know, after they were in Canada. So they've had way harder, way more intense lockdowns yes. than yeah. us. And so she was saying, you know, I've been stuck in my house with my 4-year-old and with my husband for, you know, 2 years off and on. And all I want, and we were talking about rest, all I want is just a little bit of time to myself.
Yes.
And they said, I was talking to my friend who's single and who also lives in Canada, who had been locked in her house by herself for 2 years. And the friend was saying, I'm so burnt out. I'm so depleted. All I do, you know, I'm just so, you know, all I do is sit around doing puzzles and I'm just like, I'm burnt out. Yeah. And you know, the friend said, my God, you know, how could you be burnt out? Like all I want is 2 years to myself. And it just goes to show that we all can be depleted and existentially, emotionally burnt out from the complete opposite thing.
It's that we have a couple handfuls of needs as human yep. beings. And if you completely get rid of the fulfillment of any one of those, that's just like saying, how can you possibly say that you're not doing okay? Look at all the water you have access to right. when all I have is food and all right. you have is water. And we're right. looking at each other like, right. what? You have the thing I need.
Right.
That sounds crazy. 'Cause like, of course you need both. No, we need both.
Right.
People need differing amounts of both, but you right. hit it perfectly. Like it isn't a all or nothing thing. We are dynamic, complex organisms that yes. have needs.
Yes.
And we have to be able to be responsive to what those needs are. And I think your book and the through line of it is just, it so perfectly highlights that when we get pushed to the limit to where those needs have not been met, one or more of them, mm-hmm. the words, fuck it, are perfect. Like right. you get pushed to the limit and you take radical action at that point, because that's sort of the only option you have.
Yeah. It's like it's like the rock bottom of like, okay, I don't have any option but to really look at this and make a big change, or I'm just going to stay in this situation.
Yeah. Okay. So we just have a couple of minutes left. I could literally talk to you for probably 6 more hours because there's like rabbit holes that I am just,
oh
don't
yeah.
do it. 'Cause we're going to be here for another 3 hours. I would love your thoughts on, so let's say somebody's listening to this, they're nodding along. Yeah. Burnt out. Yep. Emotionally. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I feel guilty. Yes. I don't rest. Yep. That's me. High expectations, all of those things. What do you suggest for people? Like, mm-hmm. what do you tell people to do to just, okay, friend, sit down. Here's mm-hmm. what I want you to do mm-hmm. tomorrow. Here's the first few things I want you to do.
So just like you were talking about with, we cannot take action if we don't even understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I did that I think can be really, really helpful is when I realized that I had this exhaustion that was stemming from these kind of, for me, they seemed like unlikely places, but once I really thought about it, it made so much sense. I let myself write, and you could either write a list or you could write, I wrote almost I really wrote an essay, like explaining to myself why I was so tired and what had I been doing? What are the elements of my life that I had allowed to deplete me, or that had depleted me, or that I was didn't even realize was depleting me? What are the things that I'm forcing myself to do? What, how are the ways that I'm thinking? What, you know, I wrote all these things, and I actually, you can read mine if you want. I have it. It's called Why I'm Going on 2 Years of Rest. I wrote it at the beginning, and I wrote it. It's on the Fuck It Diet. I can, which is my blog that I was writing at the time. Right now, that's kind of whole thing is like turned into podcast. Like, it's where my podcast is now. But it's linked. I'll send you the link. So if people want to read an example,
yeah, I'll put it in the show notes.
But I really laid out, because it was, I was starting to doubt myself. I was starting to get to like, well, maybe I shouldn't. Like, I went out with my friends. I wasn't drinking at the time because I was that depleted. I literally couldn't handle it. They knew that I was exhausted in general, and they were drinking. We were out. It was 9:30. I was exhausted overall. And in that moment, and I said, guys, I'm going to go. And we were on a vacation at the time. And I said, I'm going to go back to the Airbnb. And I went back and I started to feel really anxious that I shouldn't have done that, that I should still be out, that this is a mistake. What's wrong with me? And so I sat down and I wrote out this, why do I need rest? Why am I in this position in the first place? And I explained it all to myself, all of the years of the pressure that I put on myself, all of the guilt, all of the everything. And again, if you want to read an example, I'll give you the link so people can read it. But I got to the end and I felt calm because it made sense. I was able to make sense of it.
It's validating.
Yes. And it was stuff that, like, if I just explained it to be, and I even said in the, like, I even said, and I explained this in the book too, near the end of the book, you know, if I said to somebody, I'm really tired and burnt out, and they said, why? I would say, well, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's like from years, you know, it's hard to sum up. And it was hard to defend myself if someone kind of questioned it. But if I could refer back to that, it was so helpful.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing, I think, to kind of legitimize your exhaustion. Because if you can't legitimize it, you're not going to let yourself do anything about it. You're going to talk yourself out of it. You're going to say, well, it's not that bad. You know, well, there's no good reason for it. So that's helpful. And then another thing is to make a list of all of the things that you are currently doing that is depleting to you, or that you dread doing, or that you feel is like a big suck on your energy. And there are going to be a lot of things on that list. First of all, there are going to probably be a lot of things on that list. So let it be a really long list, but there are also going to be a lot of things on that list that you can't do anything about.
Yes.
That you have to keep. They are, you know, that's just what life is. Life, like, we have to do things that we don't want to do, or that are difficult, or that are exhausting. But there will be things, and allow yourself to write beliefs and kind of like ways that you operate on that list too, because there will be things on that list that you don't have to do, and that you believe you have to do for some reason. There's some belief under there. There's something to unpack. Or there's something on that list that you can take a break from for a little while. There will be things on that list that you can reevaluate and take space from, or at least have more awareness around why you're forcing yourself to do this thing. And again, like for you, there was this level of extra pressure, extra perfection, extra following the regiment, that was actually depleting you, when that, you know, your structure that you've created is actually to help preserve your energy and help preserve your sanity. But there was still this layer of extra pressure that was what needed to go. And I think, again, like making that list can just help us see it all, like actually see it on paper. Because again, if we can't take stock of all the things that we have to do and all the things that we don't necessarily have to do, what are we going to be able to do about it?
That's so good. Caroline, I like I said, this is a really hard episode to end, because there's so many more things that I want to ask you. And so many more topics that I want to explore. But what I'll say is that officially you just have an open invitation. You can come back anytime.
I'd love
you write
to.
Your next book, you come back, we'll I'd talk about it some to. More. I mean, literally, this has been phenomenal. So I just appreciate you being here. Can you tell people where they can find you, where they can buy your book, where they can get access to your podcast, all of that stuff?
Yes, yes, yes. So I spend way too much time on Instagram and you can find me at The Fuck It Diet. I'm there. Just,
you have a great account. I started following it. It's really great.
It's just like madness. You know, I even said this yesterday, like I do write about things that I think are very sincere and that are truly meant to help people. But at the same time, in my heart, I'm a humorist and absurdist. And, you know, that's infused into my work. And that's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of just like silliness and absurdity on Instagram. So if you want to find me there, but through Instagram, you can also find, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, the sincere things that I have to offer. You can also go to thefuckitdiet.com. Or thefuckitdiet.com/tired. And that's where you can find links to where you can buy Tired as Fuck. You can also read the beginning for free. You can sign up to read the beginning for free. And you can also find it just anywhere books are sold in North America and also in the UK and UK territories. You should be able to order it. But yeah, you find me at the Fuck It Diet, go to thefuckitdiet.com. You can if you're interested in the Fuck It Diet, you can find all about that. Or if you're more interested in Tired as Fuck and burnout, you can find that too.
Amazing. This has been phenomenal. It's so timely just based on what we've been talking about on the podcast and where we are as a society. And I am so appreciative of you.
Thank you, April. This is so fun.
All right, friends, hang out for just a little bit. There are a bunch of things that came up today, as I mentioned, that we didn't explore, but there are a few resources, including some of the links that Caroline mentioned that I want to make sure that we hit. So hang out for just a second and I'll be back with some fun goodies for you. Oh, you guys, I so hope you enjoyed that conversation with Caroline Dooner. I hope you took so much value from it. There are so many pieces of that that just made me feel so, I guess, validated for how I've felt at times. And also, I feel like I have some permission to do the things that my human biological animal self just needs in order to, you know, show up the way that I want to. I mentioned that there were a lot of rabbit holes that I didn't go down during that episode because it would end up being a 3-hour episode. We were just really on a roll. So I want to just mention a few things because I think they will really help you take maybe the practice of resting or supporting yourself. It'll help you take it further. And also, it just helps you start to explore just a couple of those rabbit holes that I didn't go down. The first one is I want you to check out an interview I did with Dr. Margaret Rutherford. This was episode 161 of the podcast, and she is the author of the book Perfectly Hidden Depression. Here's what's interesting. You know, in Caroline's conversation, we talked a lot about this idea of expectations, sort of the layer, one of the things that contributes to the layer that we add on top of just the stressful stuff that we absolutely have to do. We add this layer of just expectations and trying to live up to other people's expectations and make them proud and satisfied and all of those things. What we're finding is this idea of perfectionism can actually stem from a more modern form of depression. And I don't say modern form because it has arisen in modern times, but we've just recently recognized it for what it is. So perfectly hidden depression is this idea that you look at somebody on the outside and they are killing it. They're doing everything that society would expect of them. But the driving force underneath is one that is not of pure enjoyment. They're not doing it because that is just naturally what they are called to do. They're doing it because they're just desperately trying to measure up and appear perfect
and appear like they're worthy and enough. And so there was so much about that conversation that echoed this conversation with Caroline. So if any of that resonated with you, please go check out Dr. Margaret Rutherford's episode. It's 161. It's linked below in the additional resources. Next, Caroline talked about her job as a professional actor and singer and how she did this for a decade and a half before realizing, oh my God, am I exhausted because of it. There is a psychological principle called role engulfment that can lead us to stay in jobs or situations longer than we should. Role engulfment means we take some type of role that we have. So lots of times this happens in two ways. It happens with our professional role. If you found yourself, somebody asks you, to tell me about yourself and you say, oh, I'm the insert your title of insert your department at insert your company. I am the vice president of HR for Target, right? Like it's as though that's the most important part of us. We take a role that we play in our life and we fuse it with our identity. We make it become us. When really it's just a thing we do. That's just a job we do. That isn't you, but we fuse it with our sense of self. Parents also do this. Being a mom, being a dad, being a parent, that can lead to role engulfment. And so you end up taking that role, that thing you do, and you make it become part of yourself. And it can make it really difficult to make changes or see issues because essentially making a change or quitting your job or changing your job becomes a threat to your identity. And psychologically, we will protect that above almost anything else. So I actually did an episode on this. It's 276. It's again linked below in the additional resources, but it's a whole episode focused on role engulfment and how that keeps us in situations. In this episode, I talked about professional situations, but it's what much more widely applicable. Wow, can that be sticky? The last piece that I want to highlight from our content is episode number 275. It is the link between self-compassion and self-care. Caroline used the perfect two words. Go back and listen to it. When she started thinking about why she was so exhausted and it, you know, she wrote out the whole script of like what was going on in her life when she was on vacation, like, why am I so tired? Oh my gosh, what's going on? And she wrote the whole like opus down of what was making her so exhausted. And she looked at it and she said two words that are golden. She said, of course I'm exhausted. Those two words, of course, trigger our sense of self-compassion. They, instead of putting us in the mindset of, oh, you are exhausted and I don't even know why. Like everyone else is fine. Everyone else could handle this. Everyone else is doing better than you. That puts you in this self-critical mindset. But if you can look at your situation and you can genuinely say, oh my gosh, of course, that connects you to what's called a common humanity. It allows you to see that any person, any similar person in a similar situation would have the exact same feelings, thoughts, impulses, reaction that you're having. You're not weak. You're not deficient. There's nothing wrong with you. Of course, you're burnt out. So I wanted to highlight that because self-compassion, it is like, it's not a panacea in psychology, but man, is it a huge tool for you to cultivate. So episode 275 talks specifically about the link between self-compassion and self-care, but heck, go to peakmindpsychology.com/blog and in the search bar, type self-compassion, listen to all those episodes. It is such an incredible practice to cultivate, to support yourself. And the last thing, I just want to highlight Caroline and her work again. You can go to thefuckitdiet.com/tired to get a copy of her book, to get all the resources that go along with it, to, you know, sign up to read the beginning of her book if you want to just try it out. Her team sent me a copy of the book in advance of this interview. It is outstanding. And if anything, it's just validation. Of course you're tired. Of course you're burnt out. Of course you feel the way that you do. So I would highly suggest go get this book. It is validation. It's an instruction manual. It's a permission slip. It's all the things that you need. If you're feeling the way that we described in this episode, if you are nodding along, please go check out that book. It is going to be just an incredible resource for you. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I will see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.